Hello and welcome to the Rogue Monkey podcast and episode 74. My name is Kevin Pickard and I host the show that shares insightful stories to motivate, inspire and support you on your journeys through both work and life. The response to our first episode of season 10 has been amazing. A huge thank you to everyone who has sent in lovely comments and for sharing that episode far and wide. Make sure if you've not listened to that inspiring interview with entrepreneur Natalie Bamford, head back to episode 73 and check out that conversation. In this week's interview, we've got another inspiring story to share that started with a young man getting talked into covering a linesman role when watching a football match that his dad was refereeing. Decades later, and our guest, Dan Robertson, has just this weekend gone and been part of the refereeing team for the FA Cup final at Wembley. Today, Dan takes us on that journey from childhood through to Wembley, and we explore what it's like walking out in front of 90,000 fans and how he prepares his mind and body for that experience. Make sure you're following us on all the socials as we're going to be posting more and more great content in the coming weeks, especially as we get into the latter parts of season 10. So let's get into it and episode 74 of the Rogue Monkey podcast. Dan Robertson, the journey of a football referee from grassroots to the Premier League. Hello and welcome to the show, Dan. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, good, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. Now, thanks for coming on. This is a first for the show. We've never spoken to somebody in your role before. So if you'd give our listeners and our viewers out there an introduction as to, I guess, who you are and your headline journey so far.
Okay, yeah, great. Yeah, no, as I said, thanks for having me. I love doing these sort of things. So it's good to get the message out there as well. So I'm a Premier League assistant referee. I've been professional for 4 years now, so since 2018. I had a two-year gap before that, which I was full-time without contract, so effectively professional but just not getting a salary with it, which I'm sure we'll touch on at some point as part of my journey. Previous to that, I've been involved in loads of roles in football. So I was chief exec at Beds FA, so ran all football in Bedfordshire. I've been a referee manager in two different counties, so Bedfordshire and Middlesex, two very different counties from where I grew up from. So comes with its challenges, but trying to get referees involved in football effectively to recruit, retain and develop referees. So done that from the age of 21. Previous before that, I've had all sorts of jobs. So I was driving instructor at 21. I was a mechanic when I left school. But I've been involved in football really from the age of about 10 or 11 in refereeing. 10 or 11, played football as a kid, not very good, which is why I got involved in refereeing, which I think if you speak to most of the lads and Sian, they will tell you that Sian will tell you she hated playing football. But yeah, all the lads were the same. They'd never really made it as a footballer, but wanted to stay involved in the game. Aside from that, I've got a little boy who's 6 years old, so I try and spend as much time with family as possible. And I know you've had my wife, Julia, on the show already. She's gone through her journey with you as well, so it'd be interesting to touch on that a little bit and show some of the challenges that we've gone through and how it's helped me as well develop. I've also worked in different sports, so I've done a bit with Badminton England after they lost their money from UK Sport on the Finance Risk Advisory Board, which was a challenging time. Obviously they got some funding back now, which is fantastic. I've done that for 2 years, and I've been a tutor, mentor, coach within football as well, so quite a broad sort of spectrum of things to help me with my journey, if you like.
So there's a thousand and one things to dive into, but the first thing I want to ask is, where did this kind of interest in sport full stop come from? Because it seems to kind of start with everybody in a different place. Some people at school, some people it's their kids' sports team, whatever it is. So where did it first kind of occur to you that you had a real interest for this?
Good question. So I'll come into refereeing specifically in a minute, but for playing football, my next door neighbour, so I grew up in not the nicest part of London, sort of South London, and moved to Surrey. Well, I was born in Birmingham, actually, but grew up in sort of South London, Surrey sort of area, which everyone thinks Leafy Surrey is a lovely place, and it's really not all that lovely. Some of it is very, very nice. some of it not so much. And I don't think it wasn't the safest place to go out playing on the streets. So we used to go next door with my mates, sit on the lawn, and he was playing football with his brother. So me and my little brother used to go around there and play football. So that would have been probably six, I reckon, seven, it started. really wanted to get involved in football. Mum and dad couldn't really afford to take us to the football team, but found a team that would take us for free, so we didn't play any subs or nothing like that. Me and my brother then started playing for the same team. He's a couple of years younger than me, but was very good at football. So he played up and made us a little bit better than what we were, which was always nice. And that's sort of like where my football sort of desire came from, if you like. When it comes into refereeing, I must have been about 9 or 10, I reckon. Manager left, his kid didn't want to play football anymore. So we were looking for a manager. So my dad started managing my team, knew nothing about football. And when I say nothing, I mean, he literally had no idea, no clue about anything at all. So he took a referee's course to learn about the laws of the game. He also took his level one coaching badge, which back then I think was called the Junior Football Managers or something like JFM course. So he'd done that just to understand football. And my dad being my dad, wouldn't do things in halves. So he's like, I'm going to do the referee's course. I'm going to go and referee. So we started refereeing for like local teams around Croydon and Sutton and places like that in South London. And I used to go and watch him. So I would have been 10, I reckon, at the time. One day turned up, team didn't have a linesman. My dad was like, my son will do it. Pay him a fiver, as he was back then, which is half the fine. And he will do the line. So I just remember being terrified seeing on one pitch next to me, people fighting, kicking lumps out of each other. And then my dad's giving me a flag and said, run a line for this team. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And the team were like, you've done really well. You're good at this. And then sort of word got around a bit. So then instead of actually having a sub do it, they used to pay me every week to do it. So that's how it started. Got quite good at it, I guess. And people liked me. Went on the referee's course. I was 12. Couldn't actually qualify as a referee to 14, but I was 12 years old. But sat on that, it's like 8 weeks or 10 weeks on a Monday, like 2 hours every Monday. Went through that sort of process to understand football and refereeing. And then decided at 13, 14, I'd actually do it properly, get my badges and sort of the rest is history, if you like. So I started refereeing on Chelsea and Fulham academies and then sort of progressed through quite quickly at a young age.
That's fascinating because I guess there wasn't a level of intention at the start. You just kind of fell into it. But actually, most people kind of, especially with their passions in the childhood stage, go through that early journey up to like the end of school. And your passion is quite simply at that point, your passion. At what point can you remember that kind of tip between, I'm doing this, it's a nice little learner, I'm doing it kind of on the side, if you like, alongside school and other stuff, to going, this is actually going to be a professional path? Or was that something, because you had all these other roles, that you kind of went away to and then came back to? Or how did that work, of that transition from, I guess, yeah, the education and the passion alongside it to doing it as a full-time career?
That's a really good question, because probably not till a lot later than you'd expect, if I'm honest. I think probably very talented at refereeing and running the line especially, but very talented as a referee and never really like actually put any effort in. I was one of those lazy people that I'd never train, I'd never eat right, I wouldn't do any sort of like tactical analysis of games or anything like that. Obviously back then filming of games couldn't really happen. So that initial sort of like desire, I didn't really have that to a later sort of age. The time when I went, right, now I want to go professional, now I want to focus, was when I met Julia, if I'm honest. Like, she was the person who sort of guided me to say, pull your finger out, you're quite good at this. And there was a transition period within refereeing back in 2016, I think it was, where you could pick if you wanted to referee or run the line. Traditionally, you'd always do both until you come to sort of a football league referee, and then you'd only referee. You couldn't just pick being an assistant referee. It was never an option. 2016, the FA changed. They just had a change of heart saying, well, actually, people want to run the line. We'll give them the option. And it's the same time they professionalised assistant referees in the Premier League. So they got a full-time contract. And there was a creation of full-time referees on the Championship, which is known as Select Group 2 or SG2 within the referee world. And that basically had a list of referees that were professional, got contracts, that he paid, gave up jobs, and the Premier League was then completely full-time. We then got asked if we wanted to apply to be sort of professional as assistant referees without a contract. So we would go all over the country, where traditionally you would stay within 100 miles of home. So I was chief exec at the time. We knew this was coming up. We lived in Luton at the time as well, so we weren't living in Norwich, where we are at the moment. And Julia said to me, why don't you slow down sort of like hours of work, go part time, put effort into this? Because the apple, if you like, getting onto Premier League is, or carrot, sorry, as an analogy, to get onto Premier League will allow you to spend more time at home, spend more time with family, et cetera, et cetera. Work didn't want me going part time, so I left. We moved to Norwich. And then I was like, what am I going to do now? Full time sort of athlete, if you like, have no idea what I'm doing. Let's try and focus on getting promoted into Premier League. But if I'm totally, that's probably the time I said I now need to put the effort in because I've given up my job. And there was a lot of hardship through the family that we went through at the time for me to be able to do that, selling houses, moving away, had a little kid. My family are obviously still down sort of Surrey direction. Her family are in Norwich. So like as a journey as a person, it completely ruined me for a couple of months would probably be the best way to start, just to sort of like state it. But then we put like a process together to get me promoted, which worked after 2 years. So that's the time when I pulled my finger out, for the better phrase. And I decided I want to do this. It's an option.
I wanted to ask, I guess, how your personal and professional philosophy evolved as you went through that journey. But I think you kind of alluded to it quite there. It almost became like a T junction where you had a choice of, I go this way, I'll go this way. And if I go this way, it's going to be graft. But actually, like you said, there's that carrot hanging there of that if you do this and you go through the various steps of the journey, you're going to get to that point. And at what point when you were doing that, were there any points where you went, this isn't worth it, I can't do it, I'm really struggling? The kind of things that everyone goes through when they take that leap of faith and I guess doubt, have I made the right choice? Talk through some of those moments.
Oh, is where to start? Yes, is the answer to the question. There was many, many times. I think I don't think people realize from an outside world the sacrifices people make within refereeing. Like not just to go, like there's loads of guys now on the championship who are in the same situation as me that took that leap of faith and they never made it. They haven't gone to Premier. Then they're like, what do I do? And I would be lying if I sat here and said I didn't have them doubts. My first year was a transition year. Julia's background is, I know for those that haven't listened to your sort of podcast with her, she has gone through this development, sort of elite development athlete stage. She understands it 100%. She teaches it, lectures in it. So she knew what I needed to do in myself to be an elite athlete, if you like, and to be able to succeed. So that first year was a transition period to say, what am I currently doing? What do I need to do? So technically, I was very good. I was talented, but I had no idea with nutrition. I didn't work with a psychologist, which in refereeing is so important. And you don't realize that until you're at an elite level with the pressures and stuff. I didn't have any sort of tactical awareness, if you like, of teams. I wouldn't look at setups. I wouldn't look at how they're going to play and how that could impact what I do to manage a game of football or help the referee manage a game of football. Because sometimes there'll be tactics that teams may play or change that we need to be aware of. So any set plays and blocking and stuff like that. So we would need to be aware of that. So I never looked at that. I never looked at the social aspect of refereeing. So what does a Premier League assistant referee look like? So that first year was all transition to get me into a place where I was probably seen as an elite athlete, if you like. We remortgage a house to pay for it. So when you look at the struggles, during the summer you don't get paid because no matches. So you got a 3 month period where I wasn't getting paid. So I done carpet fitting with friends. I've done all sorts of different things to try to just earn money with just doing like part-time work effectively, just to get enough cash to get through the summer. Then the season starts again and you can sort of crack on with it. We had days when we'd go into shops and we'd have 20 quid in the pocket and we had to get a week's worth of shopping. We had to get nappies for the baby. I couldn't afford to get to games. You'd have to put on credit cards. So the sacrifice financially was massive and it put us into debt and all sorts of things just to try to put me in a position. So when you have a bad game after a Saturday or Sunday and you're waiting for the assessment of that game to come through, you worry, is it going to be good enough? Am I going to get a game next week? If I don't get a game, am I going to feed a family? That sort of the psychology of that is like unreal. So yeah, times I went through that sort of journey was every week for 2 years effectively. Saying, have I done the right thing? What happens if I don't get promoted? What happens if I don't get a contract? I'm gonna have to go and look for a job. And if I hadn't have been promoted when I did, we'd agreed that I would have gone out and tried to find a full-time job. That was the so it happened at the right time. And I'm a big believer everything happens for a reason. And it was just my time. I put the effort in, I put the graft in, I developed as a person, and I got the when the opportunity presented itself, I just took it with two hands. But I'd be lying if I sat here and said that we didn't have struggles, like relationship wise, broke down completely over periods of time. It was horrendous. And some of that's irreparable now, because it's like we went through that journey together as a family. But yeah, it was tough, very tough.
It sounds extremely tough. And I'm fascinated by something you said there around obviously nutrition and psychology. I remember doing the RFU's referee test 10, 15 years ago and coming away from that thinking, okay, when I watch a game now, I'm probably going to have a bit more of appreciation as to, yeah, to how hard it is. But I think just you talked about the psychology aspect of it. And again, I think depends on people's backgrounds, but if you've never walked out in front of an arena of 5, 10, 15, 50, 60, 70,000 people, and depending on how the game goes, there can be quite a lot of feedback coming to you is probably the more politically correct way of putting it. What was your first experience of that? And at what point did you start, I guess, going down this psychology route to actually start managing that? Because left unchecked, it could probably become something that kind of really adds almost like a monkey on your back where you feel like, why am I doing this? Everyone's got it in for me. I don't really want this kind of abuse. So talk us through that journey.
So the feedback side of it, it's going to sound ridiculous, but you don't hear it. So people don't believe that. That's probably the most common question I get. Like, how do you deal with people shouting at you? And all you hear is a roar. So it's actually a lot harder to referee dog and duck on a Sunday than it is at Wembley Stadium, as an example, because it's personal when there's 10 people watching and you can hear everything they say. A big arena, you just hear a roar. So you know people aren't happy, but unless you're at a very tight ground where you maybe hear the odd thing now and again, you're so zoned in, all you hear is a roar. So that's the first thing. From a psychology aspect, the way that I worked with psychologists was more to put me in the present. I was constantly thinking about the future and failure, if you like. So my relationship with failure, I know Jay Comfrey talks about this in his podcast and stuff like that. You need to have a good relationship with failure. Don't be scared of it. And something that I was afraid of failing for my family, effectively, especially on the 2 years that I was full-time. Before that, I never cared. I just walked out and done my job and I didn't even think about it. And I was good at it. I was naturally fit. So I didn't need to worry about keeping fit. Then you realize there's a different type of fit and you hit 30 as well and it makes it a lot harder. you're trying to keep body fat percentages down to certain levels and stuff like that. And then I was sort of, because I decided I wanted to be an athlete, obviously that side of it changed. But I was looking too far ahead and I spoke to our psychologist I had at the time. Yeah, to Liam, and I just said, I need to do something to keep me in the present. So he said, well, don't look at one game that your mood every week goes like that. So you have a good game, then you have a bad game, then you have a good game. You need to be boring, is the way we sort of put it. Be boring, just be sort of at that level constantly. Don't let the highs get too high, lows too low. Look over a 3-game period, look how you're performing there, look at any trends where you can learn from. Do a lot of mental rehearsal and visualization. So there were two things I really sort of focused on. Keeping concentration in the game. So if you drift, if you have periods of game, sometimes the way the game goes, you could stand still for 10 minutes at a time. How do you keep switched on? So we've done a lot of sort of triggers with that and self-talk and stuff. And there's also the parking decisions. Obviously, on the Premier League, we've got VAR now, so it's a bit different. But you go through your whole career making a decision and everyone tells you it's wrong. But 99% of the time you're correct. So that psychology of believing you're correct when you make a decision, we worked on that a lot. So don't, because sometimes reaction players can tell you've made a completely wrong decision. You've completely messed up. But actually, when you review it, you're correct. So how do you get sort of like that mentality that you're always right? That was what sort of pushed me down that route to go, I need to buy into this. And it's completely blow my mind, for a pun, but it's brilliant.
Let's talk a little bit about then VAR, because I know it's been in a little while now and you've had that experience of that. Have you had the experience where you sit and you're the the person actually changing the decision or not, as the case may be. What's that dynamic been like going from, I guess, the good old days, if we want to call it that, to where it is now, where as a decision, a call either way, actually, no, we need to review it. And then that process of going through it, what's it like sitting on the other side of that?
You have in your mind that there's four main criteria to be able to go through decision making. So direct red cards, penalties, goals when it's scored, or mistaken identity. So they're only four things you ever check. I'm never the actual VAR. I'm the assistant VAR, so AVAR as we call it. So we're there to support, like we would on a match day, support whoever the VAR is. So very rarely will we get involved in actually changing decisions unless it's offside based, because we're sort of the experts in it. So they may sit and go, I think this, what's your view on it? The challenge with it is that the expectation from everyone, including ourselves, is that we need to make the right decision. Sometimes there's a grey area, and that is where obviously a discussion takes place, certainly within the media and stuff, of, well, should you have done this, should you not? But from our point of view, you just obviously leave things alone, because it's the grey area. It's in for the clear and obvious error. So we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make sure we get the right call. We don't always. Sometimes we make mistakes. But until someone's been in that pressure environment where you have to see a situation, look at a camera, decide within, everyone expects it done within 10 seconds, which isn't reality, and then it has to be correct, is stressful. But it's, it's obviously, it's an evolving system all the time. It'd be interesting to see where sort of technology in general takes us over the next few years.
I mean, we talked about some of the challenges, I guess, there, and the more stressful aspects of it. Let's talk about some of the good stuff. What have been your golden moments looking back, that you know, even when you were doing it kind of part time, what were the moments that have stood out for you as that was amazing, even just whether that's personally or in a professional capacity?
Yeah, it's amazing experiences. Walking out of Wembley, I think I went to when I was sort of a kid playing football, and that my dad used to take us on football tours, if you like, but it weren't football tours. You get the club to pay for the kids to go to Wembley to watch sort of like the youth teams and stuff like that. To go and do that as a fan at the old Wembley and then walk out of the new Wembley on a game is like incredible. That is like pinnacle of career. Anything internationally, I've done a few international games, I've been abroad. That's always an experience that you sort of treasure, because you're representing your country and English refereeing. So anything like that, 100%. Finals, you take your partners, so you can celebrate with them an achievement, because they have a massive part to play. And it's not always partners that go, sometimes it's close family or close friends and stuff like that. But to go through a journey, and it's very hard as referee generally, as it is, as refereeing goes, it's very hard. So to be able to celebrate some sort of success with your family is brilliant. But personal achievements, obviously getting on the Premier League is the biggest one personally for my family and what it meant for me at the time, and how life-changing it was under intense like pressure all season, to be able to park everything, not just me, but Julia and my close family and friends as well to support me, to park everything game upon game for 45 games I'd done that year, I think, and just reset every single game, go and do it, make a decision, reset it, go and make a decision, do it again, and not make any major errors. And there was some very close calls throughout that season where I almost did. And I think there was coming on, I'm sort of going off track a little bit here, but with when I talk about pressure throughout that season, I had a game at Cardiff against Wolves with Mike D as a development game, like a training game. And I make a decision in the 95th minute to give a penalty to Cardiff. They're losing 1-0 at the time. They just missed the penalty 2 minutes before that. They then missed this penalty. Wolves win the league and get promoted. Cardiff come second, so they still get promoted, but could have closed the gap on Wolves at the time. That one decision sort of epitomised everything I'd done in a year. It was like, if you look at calmness under pressure, making big decisions, fitness to be in the right position at the time, at that point in the game, keeping completely calm when everyone around you is losing their heads, the pressure of working with a big personality of Mike as well as a referee, Mike's massive personality. And at the time I was like, wow, like he's going to make all decisions, don't get involved. And then something comes along in the 95th minute. I could have easily screwed up my season in one game, in one decision, 95th minute. And everyone that knows me talks about, well, that got you promoted because you made the correct call. But actually it was sort of like the 39th game, I think it was, or 40th game at the time of the season, where all that hard work and practice had come together for one call. And that's when I talk about being like moments, if you like, coming off the pitch, completely oblivious to what I just made a decision. I didn't think about the consequence of it at the time. Putting that in perspective, I know that Julia and one of my best friends, Ben, were at home watching it, thinking, what are you doing? Don't get involved. Like, I could have easily have just done nothing, because they're like, could throw the whole season away. But that, as a moment, sort of put together everything I had done for a two-year period. So I think that's, from a family perspective, probably the proudest moment I've had. To, I've had the balls, so to speak, to make a call without even really thinking. It's just a completely instinct. It's just complete instinct of all that years of training coming together for a decision. And I think that helped me progress into where I am at the moment, without a doubt.
I think it's interesting because we talked to a lot of elite athletes over the last kind of coming up 3 years on the show, and you have these kind of moments where people think that it's the overnight success or it's all just come together in one moment. And it's like, you don't see all the other stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And I guess that leads to where I want to go next with this, because you talked about that journey and what's some of the stuff that perhaps people watching the game on a Saturday, or you know, perhaps putting out their opinions and not really thinking about what they're saying, what don't they see that goes on behind the scenes to get you to that point? Take us through, I guess, some of the real challenges and the hard work that you've gone through to get there.
Yeah, like some of it, obviously, I've touched upon already with not working, by having to work and then go and do a game on a Saturday. Referees in the Football League at the moment, so League One and League Two, they're not full-time. They're not professional. They all have jobs. They then go and referee here, there and everywhere around the country on a Saturday, do the best they can do, but they're not full-time. That's a challenge with managing time off work, which is like trying to find a job that allows you to have time off. Basically, I want a salary, but I'm never going to be here, because on a Tuesday, I'm going to be in Carlisle. On a Saturday, I'm going to be in Plymouth, so I need to leave on Friday at 2 o'clock to miss the traffic. And like, so that's a massive challenge. And it's a complete diverse group of people as well. You have like electricians, postmen, chief executives of companies. Like, it's complete a mixed array of what people do. So that's a massive challenge for everyone, of which I've come through. At the younger age groups, I think it's support generally. Like, I was very lucky that I got supported in the location I was in. I got assaulted when I was 15, could have easily walked away, but I didn't, because of the people I had around me. But there are people that do walk away. So I think that physical violence, it's not something that people like talking about, but it is a realistic thing that happens with refereeing as well. And I think the support is getting better and better and better out there, but it still scares people off. So I think that's one challenge that people need to overcome. And it's also, people don't like being shouted at generally. And when we're looking at progressing sort of like through, it gets easier as you get higher. But everyone thinks it gets harder, but it doesn't. The respect from players and clubs, especially in a professional game, is massive. Like, we get respected massively. May not look like it on TV sometimes, but sometimes you see a player shouting. They're not necessarily shouting at a referee. They may be shouting at a teammate, but then they pan to a referee and it makes it look like they're shouting at you. I think that's a challenge as well, because people think, oh, you're getting loads of abuse on a Saturday. Realistically, it don't happen that much. And I said this to someone recently, they didn't believe me. And I'm like, just look at the situation. Sometimes players don't shout at us. They're shouting at teammates. They're shouting generally because they're angry that they've made a bad pass or whatever. But sometimes it looks like they're shouting at us. Plus, we're 50 metres away with 60,000 people shouting. You do not hear it. So the higher you get, the easier it becomes. So support's massive, obviously, at lower levels, and it's getting much better. Certainly with the sort of like stuff the FA are doing with them. I know during my time there, it sort of like progressed massively. But I think the perception of referees is changing. And will continue to change over time. There's loads of exciting stuff coming up, which has been in the press recently about development and stuff. So I think it's only going to get better as time goes on.
Yeah, I'm casting my mind back to that Ray Winston video they did on the FA Respect campaign. And that was a perfect example. And I use that to talk to referees and potential referees in other sports of actually going, look, yes, there is obviously some really downsides to all of this, but actually the sports are getting more proactive in this sort of thing and trying to educate people. And what's kind of, I guess, now having gone up to where you are now, what does, and obviously we talked about VAR and a few other bits, but what does the future look like for referees, perhaps in a generation that the sport is very different to even what it was 20 years ago? You know, the whole commercial aspect of it, the scale of money and investment, certainly in the Premier League. What, just kind of, I guess, from an anecdotal point of view, what does the future look like through the eyes of a referee?
Exciting, in one word, exciting. It's for us professionally, I think the next generation are going to be complete athletes. I think if you look at the officials coming through the system, they're very fit. They take strength and conditioning very seriously. They work very, very hard on positioning and understand the tactical awareness. The things I went through in that 2 year period, they're doing lower down levels. So I think the future when those referees come through is going to be massive. But that goes with the game, and the game deserves it. The game deserves us to be in the best shape we can be in, to sort of work hard and be like the players, if you like. Like our aim, I've been on a course a couple of years ago, and they said they want us to look like players. So if they put me next to someone, you wouldn't know which one was which, because body fat percentage, your strength, your high speed running, your speeds, all them things are very similar as characteristics, because that's what the game deserves. And I'm a strong believer of that. So I think that will change from a physical aspect moving forward 100%, because the current referees are now going to be professional, whereas over years they haven't been. It's never been a job until 2016 for most of the people in the country. So I think professionalisation is massive. I think lower down, they're restructuring, which was in the press recently, sort of like the development pathway, if you like. Who, what that looks like at the moment, I don't know, because I've not got the ins and outs, but that can only be an exciting thing. But I also think in a female game as well, it's so much development going on. It can only be exciting. So yeah, I'm excited about the future. And being 33, I'd like to think I'm still going to be around for the next sort of 17 years or 17, 18 years or something. I'll be part of that as well, which is the exciting times.
Yeah, we had one of the England women team on. I think it's just from the youth team, maybe 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, talking about how the game's evolving and how it is exciting looking forwards. And I think also not just for the crop coming in right now, I think for that younger generation, the ones watching the 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds going on the stadium tours and going to the events and going to watch the youth teams, they actually now can see pathways, if you like, that perhaps didn't exist. They perhaps were well beyond their reach or aspirational goals 20 years ago. Whereas actually now, if you're an 8, 9, 10 year old going, what's that? And someone goes, oh, it's a professional linesman job. Oh, okay, tell me more about that. And suddenly you start factoring that sort of stuff in. I think one of the campaigns they did with football a few years ago was, if you can see it, you can be it. And I think now you're starting to get to a point where that professional, both between the men's and the women's game, is starting to expand to a point now where there's opportunities and pathways to those opportunities that didn't exist many years ago. And I think that's something. I mean, what would you say to, you know, that next crop, the kids that are still at school, perhaps watching this, the college students, university students, trying to figure out, they love the game, they've potentially done some engagement in either officiating in some capacity before. What are kind of the big benefits for you, having now gone on this journey and got to where you've got to, that you think, I guess, as an advocate to people out there looking to get into it?
Give it a go. Like the community is massive. So like 28,000 referees or something like that across the country. So it's quite a lot of people refereeing. And in each area, you've got like different communities of people which pull together. So it's almost like a football team, if you like, of referees. So the community side is brilliant. It's a realistic career. Like I do a lot of talks either at university, I've been to football clubs talking, I've been to schools and colleges and stuff. And people don't understand, I don't believe, that actually this could be your job in the future. And I think it's only going to get more professional. So I think at some point, the professionalisation will come lower and lower and lower. And the people will transition from clubs, I think, as well, because the PFA are doing some work with us at the moment and the Premier League with the transfer of players into a referee pathway. So maybe end of career or injury, don't allow them to play, but they can still referee or release from clubs and stuff like that. They've got the physical attributes to be able to referee 100%, because obviously the training they go through, they have a knowledge of the game. They need to understand how to manage players and manage, obviously, understand the laws of the game from a referee's perspective. But I think there'll be more players that come across to refereeing at some point as well, which can only help our experience. So I would always say to people, just try it and enjoy it. Like I started refereeing for money. That's the whole reason I started doing it. So I would never say to someone, don't do it for money, because I would be hypocrite, because that's why I started it. But you never realize how far you can go. Like, I was never going to play professionally. I'm very lucky that I get to walk out in the best league in the world, in my opinion, with some of the best players, if not all the best players in the world. at fantastic stadiums and facilities. I get to travel around the world seeing different stuff at the moment as well, which will come to a stop at some point. But I get to go to different places, meet different people, see different cultures. Like, I could never do that in different jobs. So if you want that sort of experience where you can be involved in elite sport as an athlete, and even if the perception is we're not like elite athletes at the moment, a lot of the people are, and the next generation will 100% will be, definitely give it a go. Like, that's what I would say to people, 100%.
That's a nice message for everyone out there, I guess, to pull it together. But I've now got, I guess, my final question is, looking back to yourself, what would you say if you went all the way back to the kid running up and down the side of the pitch for a fiver to where you are now? What would be your message if you could go back having experienced everything that you've gone through?
Pull your finger out. I was lazy. I didn't try hard enough. Didn't like getting feedback. There wasn't anything but positive. A typical kid, I guess. My administration was horrendous. I almost stopped refereeing many times because I couldn't send, I weren't emails at the time. It was a card we had to fill in to accept games. But I used to always get dates mixed up. If I had been more organized and actually put effort into sort of like maximize my talent, if you like, I could have been where I am now a long time ago. It's sort of like I stagnated for a long time because I just didn't put the effort in. So I would say to myself, get organized. This could be a career for you. You just need to be more sort of like get up and go. You need to have more energy. I don't have many regrets in life, if I'm honest. But one regret is that I just faffed about for so long when I could have been pushing on and just sort of achieving my dreams earlier, if you like.
I think that's a really nice message. And I think you talked about going and giving talks at clubs and schools and universities and stuff. And actually, that's one of the things now I find actually talking in front of students or whoever it is still early on, if you like, in their career pathway, actually opening their eyes a little bit and sharing some of these lessons. So it's been really nice to kind of unpick that a little bit and hopefully share it with people all around the world, and certainly in the UK with people looking to go into that activity. It's going to be something for them that I can hopefully get a much better handle on, having heard that firsthand experience from you today. So Dan, thank you. It's been really, really interesting, and looking forward to kind of seeing where it goes next for you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I've really enjoyed it. So hopefully it comes across well when I get the message out there. Very good.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. And don't forget, we've got a back catalogue of content that goes all the way back to January 2020, including fighter pilots, Olympic champions, TV presenters, and inspiring authors. We'd really appreciate it if you can give us a quick rate and review, however you're joining us today. And if you don't want to miss out on any future episodes, make sure you hit subscribe. Our community update drops once a month, and we've got some great guest content being added, so be sure to sign up for that. And finally, we're all about inspiring and supporting as many people as possible. So if you can share this episode with one person that you think would enjoy it, that would be really, really cool. Thank you again for joining us for another episode of the Rogue Monkey Podcast.